JC Corcoran Podcast.
This is just the facts about Santa and his sleigh.
Now, this isn't the how much the 12 days of Christmas would cost.
No, no, none of that
anybody,
stuff.
You
know, I hate
you,
that.
You have my permission to put your foot through any television that sports a reporter that calculates how much the 12 days of Christmas, the 12 gifts thing, would cost in 1995.
Don't say that too loud. I'm going to walk in today. Jamie, you know we have an idea.
A News Channel 4 investigation. Go ahead, what do you got?
Does Santa come with flying reindeer to deliver presents at Christmas? Well, here are just the facts. No known species of reindeer can fly, but there are 300,000 species of living organisms yet to be classified. Although most of these are insects and germs, this does not rule out flying reindeer. Thanks to the different time zones, Santa has 31 hours of Christmas to work with, assuming he travels east to west. This works out to 822 visits per second. That means for each celebrating household with at least one good child in it, Santa has 1/1000th of a second to park, hop out of the sleigh, jump down the chimney, fill the stockings, place presents under the tree, eat the snacks, and return to the sleigh.
That's 1/1000th of a second.
That's right.
Yeah.
Now, assuming all 91.8 million stops are evenly distributed throughout the Earth, the total trip will be 75.5 million miles. That means Santa's sleigh must move at 650 miles per second, 3,000 times the speed of sound. Assuming that each child gets nothing more than a medium-sized Lego set weighing about 2 pounds, the sleigh is carrying a payload of 321,000 tons, not counting Jolly St. Nick. A standard reindeer can pull no more than 300 pounds. Even if flying reindeer might pull 10 times more than normal reindeer, Santa would need 214,000 reindeer to pull the sleigh. The reindeer, payload, Santa, and sleigh would weigh more than 353,000 tons. This is four times the weight of Queen Elizabeth, the cruise ship. This 353,000 tons traveling at 650 miles an hour creates tremendous air resistance, heating the reindeer in the same manner as a spacecraft re-entering the Earth's atmosphere. The lead pair of reindeer will absorb 14.3 quintillion joules of air per second each. Now, wait a minute. The lead reindeer, as a result, will burst into flames, exposing the reindeer behind them and creating massive sonic booms in their wakes. The entire reindeer team will be vaporized within 4.2 thousandths of a second. Santa will be subjected to centrifugal forces 17,000 times greater than gravity. Assuming that Santa weighs 250 pounds, he would be pinned to the back of his sleigh by 4 million pounds of centrifugal force. Merry Christmas.
No, I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest disc jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over.
Monday, December 12th, 2022, 65 days until pitchers and catchers report to Jupiter, Florida. How you doing, kids? You're at jcontheline.com. I expect to have a little bit of good news coming up here, maybe as early as this week. Let's see if it all pans out. I know, and I'll explain all this when we get closer to an actual date where I know for sure that I can make an announcement here, but we're not there yet. This is very frustrating for me too, just so you know. Rain, and then tomorrow, storms. Big storms, possible severe weather outbreak, although it's the upper plains, you know, like Montana and the Dakotas and stuff like that. They're just getting like 3 inches of snow an hour up there. It's just incredible. They're shutting everything down. And then you go down all the way to the Gulf Shore. You go into Louisiana, Mississippi, you know, parts of Texas and stuff like that. That is all really bad, severe weather. They're going to have a real bad, severe weather outbreak later today, but especially tomorrow. And then that's going to scoot along the North American continent and then scoot up to the coast. And probably by the end of the week, it's going to really fuck up the Northeast, which is real bad for anybody who's trying to travel, because all you have to do is have any one of the airports in the Northeast. That, of course, is both New York airports, and then you get Logan in Boston, and then Washington, D.C. I hope you're not traveling. That's all I can say. And then in St. Louis, the cold front that is usually behind big storms is actually going to be delayed for a day. Very unusual. And then by Thursday and Friday, you don't want to know, because you start looking at next week, you know, highs in the 20s and overnight lows. I would just imagine in the hinterlands, you go down around Farmington, go out towards Eureka, Warrenton, places like that, some spots in Metro East could have single digit overnight lows. So the only good thing about that is it increases your chances of a white Christmas. Dave Murray doesn't even answer his phone anymore. You get about 2 weeks before Christmas and Dave just hides, and I talked to him over the weekend because there was this really funny meme that I sent him, and this is the first time I can ever remember that something I sent him about weather that he took and that he actually immediately reposted. I can't ever remember him doing that, but he thought it was really funny. But anyhow, yeah, he just hides for like the 2 weeks before. We have a white Christmas, Dave! I don't know. I gotta go. Well, it's another Monday night, and it's another 3 hour and 9 minute movie. Last week was Babylon, which I'll review for you at the tail end of next week, because it doesn't open until the 23rd. And Avatar is tonight, and that's also like 3:12. And I got a problem with Avatar on a lot of levels. The original, I don't know. These are not my favorite kind of movies, and I sit there and I watch them because I feel obviously an obligation to do so. And it's my obligation to do so because at some point you're going to expect me to tell you whether or not you should spend your money on it. There's a lot of people who figured, well, I'll go see The Fablemans. It's Steven Spielberg. The movie's been out almost a month, and it's only made about $6 million. It's a critics movie. You know, critics who see 400 movies a year look at it, and if they're Jewish on top of it, I think it also increases their degree of acquiescence, shall we say, because there's a heavy Jewish theme that runs through the whole thing, and I didn't have that experience growing up, and a lot of us didn't, because we were Jewish, and it just doesn't connect. The movie's terrible. And I'll tell you about, like I said, the Babylon movie with Brad Pitt and Margot Robbie, who I will tell you right now, though, Margot Robbie's going to get an Academy Award nomination for Best Actress. She is awfully good in this, but does that mean the movie is any good? We'll answer that question tail end of next week. But as far as Avatar is concerned, I saw it and was like, okay, walked out of the theater and was surprised about 2 weeks later when all the reviews came out, because I'm like, did we see the same movie? I didn't think it was that big a deal. It's just me. And again, maybe it's just because that's not my kind of movie. I don't know. But you get into the whole James Cameron thing. He's such a dick. He is such a dick. He is one of the biggest dicks in all of Hollywood. Now, of course, the movie's got to be over 3 hours long. And then how would you like to work with this guy, okay? Cameron had the writers of the new Avatar movie read 800 pages of single-spaced notes that he wrote for them on their first day of work. And he told them, do your homework, and then we'll talk. And he walks out of the room. Gosh, condescending prick much? But I'll go and I'll get some popcorn and I'll get a drink and I'll watch a goddamn movie and I'll tell you in a couple of days whether the thing was any good. Do I sound excited? Huh. By the way, here we go with the Die Hard thing again. New trailer for the 4K release of Die Hard calls it, quote, the greatest Christmas story ever told. And then it goes on to describe John McClane as a man who wants to be with his family but gets stuck at the office party. End quote. Well, nothing like truth in advertising, huh? And again, if you remember whatever kind of religious training you had, and it doesn't really sort of matter whether you brought up Jewish or Muslim or Catholic or Protestant or whatever, you might recall this whole peace on earth theme about Christmas. Remember the whole peace on earth thing? And in Die Hard, there are 77 killings. I have good friends. I have friends that I love, that I adore, who won't get off this idea that Die Hard is a Christmas movie. I just really stopped talking about it, especially with them. Not getting anywhere anyhow. You fixed the St. Louis Blues. I don't know what to tell you. They had that one in the bag yesterday. They had that one in the bag, and they ended up losing it. Oh, Christ. And on the game winner, sort of looked to me like Binnington should have had that one. I don't know. But at least he's not Tom Brady today. Oh, my God. I didn't even look to see what the final score was. I finally just turned it off at the end of the third quarter. Wow. And now tonight we've got Arizona hosting the New England Patriots. It's a decent ball game right there. And, the other thing is this year, Christmas being on Sunday and New Year's Day being on Sunday, obviously, there's a full slate of NFL games. And it's not like on Thanksgiving where you get like two or three games. This is the entire league is playing on Christmas Day and on New Year's Day. You know, and it's one thing when you're talking about the television audience, but it's an entirely different thing when you're talking about the game at the actual venue. So now it's not just fans, it's broadcasters, it's all the stadium workers, you know, all the vendors, all of the concession stand people, all the parking lot attendants, all of the security guard people, all the groundskeepers and stadium operations, all that sort of stuff. Those people are going to be spending their Christmas at the ballparks. I bet you they're thrilled about that. 2,000 people were surveyed about the most overplayed holiday songs. First place tie, Jingle Bells and We Wish You a Merry Christmas, followed by a tie between It's Beginning to Look a Lot Like Christmas and also Jingle Bell Rock. You know, I can't listen to White Christmas anymore, knowing now what a horrible, awful person Bing Crosby was. You know, one of my Christmas traditions is to watch the movie White Christmas, which I already have. You know, that's Bing Crosby and Danny Kaye. I always find it amusing because years later you find out that somebody was gay, but then you watch the movie and they're coming off like any other heterosexual guy who encounters a pretty girl. And you're like, yeah, but you were. And then Bing Crosby, just textbook child abuser. And that is something that we all have to deal with. I mean, I remember how for a long time I would say that Jackson Browne was somebody with whom I connected not only on a musical level, but also on a songwriting level. And I just thought Jackson Browne was the coolest guy ever. Well, and you find out Jackson Browne's not that great a guy. I don't know exactly what happened between him and Daryl Hannah, but whatever it wasn't pretty. And in all likelihood, it did involve some sort of abuse. And it's been a while since I told you the story. I should probably mention it again. Back in the late 80s? Yeah, that's right, late 80s. So Jackson Browne is going to play St. Louis. He's going to play the Fox Theater, and he's got a new record. And the record company promoting all of this stuff did not like the treatment that they were getting from the management and the programming department at KSH. Now, I was across the street at KSD, the classic rock station, right? So to piss KSH off, the record company said, okay, fine. You won't give us a decent deal on the whole promotion and marketing and advertising of this Jackson Browne show. So fuck you. We're going to go over to Corcoran. So they came to me and I was like, sure. So they said, okay, first thing is on Thursday, you're going to get on a plane and you're going to go to Chicago and you're going to interview Jackson Browne for television and radio. See, and that was my ace in the hole all those years that it was KSH versus KSD. In reality, it was KSH versus J.C. Corcoran, but that's a separate story. But it's a war that's still going on today, by the way. But anyhow, they're like, yeah, you go to, if we send you to Chicago, you'll get a TV crew, and you will interview Jackson Browne for radio and TV, and then the night of the show, you get the welcoming rights and the whole thing. I was like, sure, fine. So we took flight to Chicago, got there at 11 o'clock in the morning, hop, skip, and a jump from O'Hare over to the music venue. It was the outdoor music venue, sort of like their version of Riverport or Hollywood Casino or Amphitheater or whatever the hell it's called this week. So I go there, and we get there about 11:30 in the morning, and we wait. And it's 1 o'clock, and we're still waiting. It's 2 o'clock, and we're still waiting. Now, we know he's got a sound check at 3, where they just go out there and they play a couple songs and they just make sure everything is all connected and, you know, that everything is working and nobody forgot to hook up a cable and the lighting and all that sort of stuff. And they'll play a couple of songs and then they'll go, okay, everything's fine. And then they go disappear for a couple of hours until showtime. So at about 1:30, I see Jackson Brown for the first time. We're sitting in one of the dressing rooms and I see him go by and he looks into our room and it's obviously me sitting there with a giant microphone and there's a camera and lights. And so he knows what's coming down. He knows what's going on. And so, but he just keeps on going. And I'm like, okay, at least he's here, so we'll probably get ready. So let's. I'm really sort of, you know, focusing on the questions I'm going to ask and how cool this is going to be. And now it's, like I said, it's 2 o'clock, and now it's 3 o'clock. Still no Jackson Brown. And finally, we start hearing some noises and a lot of activity, and then we start hearing music. And somebody runs into our room where we're set up and says, okay, grab your cameras and come with us. We're like, okay. So we had to break everything down and get it and grab it and then run out. And they said, here, set up right here. And it was sort of like in the expensive boxes, you know, like 30 rows back. And they said, okay, you can videotape part of this sound check. So they start, and Jackson Brown immediately says, from the stage into the microphone, do not turn that camera on until we tell you. I'm like, you know, I put my hands in the air like somebody had pulled a gun on me. I'm like, it's fine. We won't do anything. We're your friends, okay? I'm thinking this. He can't hear me, obviously. And so we wait, and we're sitting there, and they're moving stuff around, and there's amplifiers. They're pushing around, and somebody's dicking with the mic and all this other stuff. And it takes a couple of minutes, and we're just sort of standing there, you know. And then he goes into running on empty, and he's playing it. And about maybe 2 minutes in, they just stop cold, and he says into the microphone, did you get enough? And my cameraman, we look at each other like, did we get enough or what? He goes, did you get that? We're like, no, you told us not to shoot anything until you told us it's okay. And he like rolls his eyes back in his head, throws his arms up in the air like, oh, for Christ's sakes. Well, there he is right now. and we're like standing there going, what's going on here? And so now everybody's sort of looking at each other. And we're like, should we roll the camera? I just do the roll thing, you know, the hand motion. And he goes, yeah, yeah. So we start rolling, and he plays about a minute of running on empty and then stops and just walks off the stage. We're like, oh, this is going to be fun. So we go back to the interview room, which is just a dressing room. And now one of the people from his entourage comes in and goes, he's having a really bad. It was like David Spade on Saturday Night Live when he was doing that thing. Like he did it in the Coneheads movie too. He's having a very rough day today. And I'm like, oh yeah, really? What's the matter? He goes, oh, you know, Daryl's from Chicago. Her mom and dad are here. And there's something going on. They're having a fight or something like that. Oh, so I'm caught in the fucking crossfire of Jackson Brown fighting with his girlfriend. He's taking it out on me. So now it's 4 o'clock and now it's 5 o'clock. Keep in mind now, the last flight out of O'Hare back to St. Louis is at 8 p.m. We haven't even done what we're there to do. And it's 5 o'clock. And finally, about 5:30, Jackson Brown comes sauntering in and sits down and gives me a great interview. He was friendly and nice and posed for a picture. And the whole thing, I'm like, I don't know what the hell's going on with you, dude. I don't know. So now, it's a couple of weeks later, Jackson, I'll get to you, I promise. Then it's a couple of weeks later, it's the night of the concert. Fox Theater does a great show, and there's a little meet and greet after the concert, and I go to this thing. I don't have a camera, tape recorder, nothing like that. I just go, and we're all sort of standing around. I don't know who most of the other people are. I'd say maybe there's like 100 people, and we're just sort of waiting for Jackson to appear. Now, I left out one little part of the story, and that is that Jackson Brown had a, I don't know if he was his road manager or his bodyguard or a combination of both or whatever, but several people had said to me, well, when that, just talk to Buddha about that. And I'm like, Buddha? That was Buddha. And almost at that very moment, a guy who's like 6'8", 400 pounds, who, in fact, looks exactly like fucking Buddha, which is, I guess, how he got his nickname. Or was it? Because, honest to God, and I still have it somewhere. I promise, I have this card, and if you don't believe me, I'll pull it out and I'll get a screenshot of it. He hands me a business card. I'm like, oh, thanks. And I give him mine, and it wasn't until later on that I looked at it, and the business card says, Buddha. Like, what? Your name is Buddha. Okay, fine. So anyhow, so it's the night of the concert, and we're waiting for the meet and greet and the whole thing, and I see Buddha walk in, and then I see Jackson Brown behind him. And they come in, and they are greeted by a couple of people. I sort of wait my turn, and he sort of walks over, and I'm like, Jackson, thanks very much. I was the guy who interviewed you in Chicago. Yeah, I remember you. And Buddha's standing there and is just sort of, you know, watching the whole thing. And I say to Jackson Brown, I said, I just want you to know that the song In the Shape of a Heart might be your all-time best work. It's magnificent writing and storytelling and musically, it's just great. I just want you to know how much I appreciate that song. And Jackson Brown looks at Buddha, and Buddha looks at Jackson Brown, and they turn and walk away without a word. And it was at that moment that I said, I've about had it with Jackson Brown. I don't even know, to this day, I don't even know what happened. It's one of those things where I sort of hoping that, well, like, it's like this. So like in the 80s and 90s and stuff like that, it was almost impossible to get to these big mega rock stars like Jackson Brown. But now here we are, and it's 2022, almost 2023, and a lot of these men and women are sort of coming out of the woodwork and making their availability available again because things are different now. And I keep hoping that at some point I get another shot at Jackson Brown just to ask him if he can possibly shed some light on this, because it's been driving me nuts for like, what, 35 years. And I would like to know what the hell was going on back in those days. But is it possible that Jackson Brown is just so bitchy that you know, he's having a fight with his girlfriend? And so he takes it out on some poor schlub like me, just trying to get a fucking interview? This is all the stuff that goes on behind the scenes. I remember John Hewlett and I were at spring training. And this was probably maybe 2003, something like that. And back in those days, as you know, Tony La Russa has lots of friends in the show business industry. A lot of people in the music business are his friends. And a lot of them show up at spring training if it's convenient for them. And somebody says, did you see that Bruce Hornsby is here? We're like, no way. Cool. So we sort of, again, you know, we waited our turn. We waited until there was sort of a lull in everything that had been going on. And then we approached him. We explained who we were. Microphones are out and ready. Can we just get, yeah, sure, go ahead. So we're talking to him, and he's giving us a great interview, right? We're having fun, and we're laughing. And at the very end of the interview, I say, and keep in mind that it used to be, you know, Bruce Hornsby and The Range. And I just say to him, hey, by the way, whatever happened to The Range? And even John's like, yeah, whatever happened to The Range? And Bruce Hornsby looks at us and just goes, come on, guys. And he just makes the motion with his hand like, that's it. It's over. And again, he turns and he walks away. To this day, we have no, what did we do wrong? See, so what you see is a nice picture on Facebook of me with Jackson Brown or Bruce Hornsby or these famous, you know, actors and movie stars and rock stars and everything. That's what you see. That's the tip of the iceberg. The story that went into what resulted as a picture that you see on social media. Sometimes that's better than the picture. It was like, what, 34 years ago, something like that? I still remember sitting in the newsroom when the word came down of this explosion over Lockerbie, Scotland, where big, you know, 747, like 300 people on board. They get about a half an hour out of, was it Heathrow? I think it was. And they're over in Lockerbie, Scotland, and the plane explodes. Everybody, I think it was 300 some odd people in the plane, all were killed, putting then 11 people on the ground. The debris was spread over, what do they say, like a 450 square mile area 450 square miles. And the investigators are like, oh, this is going to be fun. Now, one guy was convicted. One guy, Libyan guy. You know, Bob Gale and Bob Zemeckis and everybody involved in Back to the Future picked out a good enemy because it was the Libyans who had the plutonium. I mean, you do that, you have to think to yourself, how is this going to play in 30 or 40 years? The Libyans still going to be bad guys? We got to pick a country. Got to really be sure here that we have picked a country that is going to be like Japan and all of a sudden be our friends after having been our enemies. But anyway, the update on the story. So one guy gets convicted and he spent, I think it was like 8.5 years in prison, and they let him out because he had terminal prostate cancer. So they sent him home and he died about a year later. Still maintaining his innocence, by the way. Well, now, and this is just mind-boggling when you really think about it. So the investigators said, we know that there's more people involved in this whole thing. We know it, but we just got to be able to prove it. We got to be able to find them. So believe it or not, what happened was, and they just announced this overnight, what happened was that a piece of fabric was apparently in the same suitcase where the bomb was located, and the fabric, believe it or not, they traced back to a clothing store in Malta, checked the records of who bought clothing at that store, traced it back to one of the suspects, and now apparently they got him. That's another one of those things, you know, where you watch a one-hour Law and Order and everything gets all tidied up and the crime occurs and the trial occurs and the outcome is announced and you get a whole story in 1 hour. These guys have been doing investigative police work for 3.5 decades, still trying to bring everybody who was involved in this thing to justice. Steve Martin and Martin Short were hilarious on Saturday Night Live over the weekend. If you didn't get a chance to see it, get it on demand because it was really, really good. It's interesting also how Saturday Night Live is, you know, by very nature of the name of the show, Saturday Night Live. It's all about live sketch comedy. And the show has always done pre-recorded features as part of the presentation. Heck, even in the first couple of seasons, Albert Brooks used to do films for the show. But it seems like more and more now, the people at SNL are figuring out there's things that we can do on this show if we pre-record them that we could never do live. And so they did a couple of things over the weekend that were just sensational pieces of produced comedy and satire. It was a real, real good show the other night. Like I said, if you get a chance, try to see that. Looks like I converted quite a few people to the movie 29th Street. This is a movie that is, it's not a Christmas movie per se. And in fact, people who watch it get about halfway through and go, what the hell is Corcoran talking about? He called this a Christmas movie. Just trust me on it, okay? The movie is called 29th Street. It came out in 1991. Based on a true story of the very first New York State lottery winner, a guy by the name of Frank Pesch, who is portrayed in the movie by Anthony LaPaglia. And then you got Danny Aiello, who is sensational in this. Lainey Kazan, bunch of other people. Paulie Walnuts is in the movie. And why I can't think of his name now. So Paulie Walnuts is actually, Tony Sirico is in the movie. But anyhow, it's like part Goodfellas, part It's a Wonderful Life. If you can imagine those two movies melding somehow, that's what you've got in 29th Street. The problem is that it was a low-budget I wouldn't call it an indie movie, but, Robert Forster is in it, too, and he's great. But it was a small movie, and it hadn't been for Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert, who noticed the movie and really pumped it and encouraged people to go see it. And I did, and I was like, oh, my God, what a great movie, especially at Christmas. And so the problem has been very limited accessibility. Can't find the movie anywhere unless you purchase it online. Well, it's on YouTube now, and so you can call it up. There's a brand new 4K version of it, by the way, and so the movie looks great on top of it. But if you're looking for a movie that plays well at Christmas and you're tired of, you know, watching Home Alone for the 3,000th time, and just looking for something new, 29th Street. Like I said, I posted a whole thing on it on Friday on my Facebook page, The Showgram with J.C. Corcoran, and a lot of you watched it and said, you know what? Every once in a while, Corcoran, you know what you're talking about. And that's one of those cases. I really enjoyed the Smothers Brothers piece on CBS Sunday Morning yesterday. That's another thing that if you missed it and it's on your DVR, make sure you catch it or call it up on demand. It was a great, great piece. I have animal stories today. One unhappy, one happy. On this date in 2002, our yellow lab, Harry Dog. Harry had to be put down on this date, too. He's only nine, but he got that inoperable tumor, and we didn't have any choice. It was very, very sad. But then on this date in 2007, our second black cat, Louis, arrived on the scene. We still got him. By the way, last night, it's dark out. I'm walking my dog. And I was sort of walking along. And in this part of the country, there's lots of things flying around. And I got bats. I got bats. Every night, you go outside right at dusk, and you can see the bats flying around all over the place. And bats get a bad rap because bats will eat all the goddamn mosquitoes, for one thing. But, I mean, geez, think of how many you got to eat to consider it a full meal. Mosquitoes is a little thing. That would be like a human being saying, well, I had a dinner of just peas. How many peas do you have to eat before you be full? But anyhow, we got things flying around. We're getting very, very close to the time of year where, believe it or not, iguanas fall out of the trees. If it gets too cold, the iguanas just freeze up and they just fall right out of the tree and they'll hit you in the head. There are bobcats around here. Obviously, alligators, and every once in a while, an alligator will surprise somebody and just come out of a sewer drain. You know, they got those giant, big sewer drains down here. And, you know, every once in a while, every couple of years, somehow a little baby alligator grows up in the sewer system and then decides to have a look around and just comes popping out of one of these giant sewer drains. And people are like, where's my dog? Nothing at the end of the leash. And, you know, there's other things too, but you know, you're just walking the dog at night, and I'm walking along, and all of a sudden I hear this. And it sounds to me like it's coming from a tree. And I look at Luna, and I'm like, we better get the hell out of here. I don't know what's in this tree, but whatever it is, it does not sound happy about us being here. And I'm thinking, are we about to be attacked by whatever the hell is in this tree? And so I sort of pick up the pace. I'm pulling on the dog, get the hell out of here. And as I'm walking along, I hear the noise again, this time quite a bit further from where I was. I realize it's somebody's sprinkler system turning on. It's blowing the air out of the tubes. And it's making a sound. I think I'm about to be attacked by an iguana. See, I could have kept that story to myself, but I share things with you like that. So on days that you're feeling stupid, you say to yourself, well, at least I'm not as stupid as that guy on the podcast who thought he was being attacked by an iguana and it just turned out to be somebody's irrigation system flipping on in the middle of the night. Ugh. On this date in 1997, you might have been there, Rolling Stones at the Dome. And one of the reasons I tell that story is because there were some young ladies, shall we say, who were employed by one of the fine gentlemen's clubs on the east side over in Sauget. And, you know, this was the Stones concert that was being broadcast on pay-per-view for people who didn't want to go to the show or couldn't get tickets or whatever. So you were actually watching a live Rolling Stones show on pay-per-view. And it was like $60 or something like that. And they had it worked out, apparently, that in the when the Stones performed the song Some Girls, that it was arranged for a camera to get a shot of the pit area right in the orchestra pit there, just a little bit off to the side where, as I said, some young ladies from the fine gentlemen's clubs were asked to participate, shall we say. And they, in fact, participated by taking their shirts off. So mix up there, sing the song, Some Girls, and down in the orchestra pit, you've got some girls showing things off. One of which was, you're going to love this, a girl that I dated briefly who then became a producer at KTRS. And then she left that job and began to, shall we say, satisfy young males who would frequent some of the Metro East clubs. I'd gone to the show because we were broadcasting live for an hour before the show, and then I stayed for like, I don't know, an hour or two, and then I went home because I had to get up the next morning. And so I just flipped on the pay-per-view, and I'm like, wait a minute, I know her, and I remember those. It's a small world, folks. It is a small world. All right, on your television tonight, Baking It, Maya Rudolph and Amy Poehler's Celebrity Holiday Special on NBC. That's at 9 o'clock. Something called Barmageddon. Barmageddon. This is on the USA cable network, which I didn't even think existed anymore. 10 o'clock tonight, Gwen Stefani versus Sheryl Crow. All right, my curiosity's gotten the best of me there. I'm going to have to watch that. And then on Netflix, you'll see David Letterman's interview with Volodymyr Zelensky, which is supposedly pretty darn good. Late night tonight, Kate Hudson on with Jimmy Fallon. Kimmel's got Michelle Obama and Mark Maron. Lily Collins on with Colbert. James Corden, we don't know yet. And Seth Meyers has Aubrey Plaza. Kanye West has been named Anti-Semite of the Year by a watchdog group called Stop Anti-Semitism. Family's got to be pretty proud. Birthdays today, Mayim Bialik, 47. Hank Williams III, 50. Regina Hall, 52. Jennifer Connelly, there is a fine female specimen at 52. Sheila E., she's leading the glamorous life. She played with Ringo's All-Star Band at the Fox Theater a couple of years back, like 2065. Today, Bill Nye from Love Actually, 73. Dickie Betts, formerly the Allman Brothers, 79. Dionne Warwick, Crackpot, 82. Connie Francis, Where the Boys Are. I'm sorry, I won't do that again. He's 85. Bob Barker, still getting it done at 99. Yeah, but like I was saying, if you get a chance on pay-per-view and you didn't see it over the weekend, try to pick up from pay-per-view the Steve Martin and Martin Short thing Saturday Night Live. They were really, really good. They are both getting up there in age, so much so that the network made a last-minute decision to move it from NBC over to CBS. And with that, the J.C. Corcoran Podcast is done for Monday, December 12, 2022. 65 days until pitchers and catchers report to Jupiter, Florida. We're here every weekday morning right about this time at jcontheline.com. Email me, jc at jcontheline.com. Facebook, The Showgram with J.C. Corcoran. Have a great day, everybody. Talk to you tomorrow morning. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.